It's not fair.
It's not fair when producer Matt is doing the countdown and you make a Europe reference.
Just start singing Final Countdown. I thought it was funny, but it turns out it really wasn't that funny. That is more just annoying than anything else.
No, it was funny. Don't sell yourself short. Are you one of these guys? Like, do you consider yourself funny? Are you one of these people that...
No, no.
Why not?
Because I don't know. I don't think I'm a really funny guy. You're more the ha-ha than me. I'm just the annoying stories.
Yeah, but I'm funny, like, purposefully. Like, that's my only thing I have going on in life, really. You obviously have your looks and your depth of knowledge. I have to rely on dick jokes.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. I got such Dick Tracy-like good looks. Oh, look at those steely, well, hazel eyes. I was going to say blue eyes, but I can't lie.
Your eyes are intoxicating. You have beautiful Macklemore hair. Everything is great about you. You're fit.
I got to lose that. I think I got to
lose that. I have moobs. What? Your hair?
Yeah. Everyone's got it. I've had it now because this was like the big bold move for me this year, right? Our stylist, Deb Berman, she's like, we got to do something about your hair. I'm like, okay, Deb, whatever. Last year was a Young Republican look. This year, she's like, no, we're going for the Macklemore. I'm like, all right. So we'll do it. But everyone's got it now. Everybody. Duffy start rocking it now on TSN. So like, listen, I would take it to the bone, honestly, if they would let me. Like, I haven't been told many things that I can and can't do at Sportsnet. But the one time, there's two things actually. Facial hair, yeah, I was told that's a no-no because our hosts are clean shaven. And the other one is I wanted to take my hair right down to the bone. And they're like, yeah, no, you're not going to do that. I want a beard and down to the bone.
Beard? Nope. Like what kind of, like a Radko Gudas beard? Like that kind of beard?
Oh, I wish. Oh, see, yeah. I can't really grow a thick one. It would be almost like Wolfman-esque. It would take me a while. Like, I'd have to be off TV for a while and then come back with a beard. But it would take a little bit. Like, it's a summer project, essentially.
I'd have to come back next October. That's a great point, because I've often thought about that. Like, if I ever grew a beard, first of all, I can't. Like, I have huge gaps in my face. It's terrible. My beard looks like the Leafs defense. But the other aspect of it is that you literally, if you and I do things on camera, which we do, you have to take the summer to do it. You can't gradually grow a beard during the season, because then you just look drunk. And you just like, you're constantly hungover.
There are some guys that can look like Clark Gillies in Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final over an All-Star weekend. Yeah, that guy's like, some guys can just grow real fast. No, I know, pricks. Even just like a Scott Morrison-esque kind of like, thin all around. Problem is, I don't get it too up high on my cheekbones. I told you my big plan once upon a time, right? About my beard and my hair, just to be an ass. We should do this one day. Like, if one day I'm just like so wealthy that I just take an I don't give an F pill, here's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna grow my hair and cut it, and it's gonna be really short. It's gonna almost look like the Kraft Peanut Butter Bear. All right, that's what my head's gonna look like. And then I'm gonna grow, like a little thin little beard. From my chops all the way down around my chin, and then I'm going to shave Jofa in the side of my head. So it makes it look like I'm wearing a hockey helmet all day long.
Oh, my God. That's brilliant. That's so good.
Oh, just don't care. Just to look like I'm wearing a Jofa helmet all day.
Literally. Literally,
yeah,
helmet
totally.
Hair is what you're
He's got helmet hair. What? He's like been wearing a helmet, and he's just got off the ice. No, like, look at him. His freaking hair looks like a helmet. You got Jofa.
So, Corey Hirsch of Sportsnet coming up on the show today. And we've not had Corey on, but we're excited to have him on because he's done quite a good job for your network.
He's been really good. We got a whole bunch of new faces this year. He's been fantastic. Colby Armstrong's been great, too. Like, there's been a lot of like really impressive sort of new guys on the scene. And Corey's right up there. He's coming on the show.
Yeah, well, I mean, you had to bring in some new talent after all, because TSN signed all their guys to Shea Weber contracts so you couldn't get them, right? Basically
locked up. All right.
It's like, hey, ninth man on the totem pole, I understand Sportsnet sent out feelers. Here's all the money.
That's right. The deal hasn't been signed yet by the Board of Governors, so we're just going to open up the vault here and take whatever you want. Just leave us a little bit of dignity. All right. Thank you.
All right. As we approach the All-Star break, there's a couple of things that we need to talk about today. But one of them is the idea, as was put forth, I think, by Justin Bourne over the weekend, that the Eastern Conference playoff seedings are set, that there's really no reason why anyone should pay attention to the Eastern Conference for the rest of the season, if only to just see where the pieces fall. Because who is catching the wild cards is his question.
Okay, well, why don't I just go over to the...
Because Florida's in the mix.
Florida's in the mix. I could see... Mm-hmm. I mean, four-game losing streak right now for the Cats. Ah, guys, you're killing me. Where'd the goals go? I would like to say I can see Florida catching the Montreal Canadiens, but I can't. But they do have a shot. They're in the mix for the wild card. And I'm saying that maybe more with my heart than my head. Can they catch Boston?
It's tough.
Man.
I mean, you're basically looking at Florida, because Boston's not going to go anywhere. You feel like Boston's kind of figured their shit out right now. I mean, they lost one, but 6-1-3 over their last 10.
Here's the thing about Boston. They're a David Krejci injury away from falling back out of it again.
No, that's true.
That's it. That's the wild card. But to Justin's point, if everyone stays healthy and everything's kosher, then yeah, everything's looks like everyone's talking.
Everything's pretty much set. And I mean, I can't see any of that also ran pack that's behind the Cats right now catching fire and making a game of it. Nor can I see anybody that's up there in a playoff position crumbling down. I mean, maybe the outside chance that if Bishop got hurt, maybe Tampa comes back to the pack, but I think that they've amassed enough points where it's not even a situation you're worried about it.
You know what? The guys on Hockey Central brought up a really interesting point about two of these teams that are not going to make the playoffs. Sorry if you're a fan of Ontario hockey teams, the Maple Leafs and the Ottawa Senators. It means, this is what I think Doug brought up this point, he's pretty plugged into that organization through his association with Brian Murray. It means a lot to that owner. Okay, to Ottawa's owner, to be higher than the Maple Leafs in the standings, regardless of whether they're in the playoffs or not. To that organization, being higher than Toronto does mean something. I do wonder how much that tempers what they do come trade deadline time.
It's good news for Leafs fans that are worried about their draft situation. Obviously, it'll be one spot lower after Ottawa passes them.
Yep.
Indeed.
Yep.
No, I mean, it's pretty well said. And being pretty well set means that if you've followed this podcast, that I don't think you were there that day when this shit went down. Are you aware of the bet that I made with Helene St. James Helena St. James of the Free Press?
What are you doing betting? I thought we went over this after what happened last year.
Well, I made another mistake.
What, are you going to get waterboarded now by St. James? It's like, what's happening to you?
Before the season, I think the bet was that she was going to buy me a case of Bell's beer if the Leafs, if the Red Wings miss the playoffs, and I, in the heat of the moment, said I'd buy her a case of champagne.
Champagne? Okay, so hang on. You do understand the proper champagne has to come from the Champagne region, and I'm not sure if you're aware that costs. You know, put it this way: you may have to finally spend your communion money that you've been sitting on ever since you got it. You may have to finally spend it, Wish.
The good news is that we've never specified. Well, first, the point being is that the Red Wings are going to make the playoffs. I mean, they have 61 points. The Cats have 50. It would take a turnaround of catastrophic proportions for a Mike Babcock coach team for them not to make the playoffs.
Champagne? I thought you said champagne. Oh, sorry. I was wrong. I was mistaken. Enjoy this case of champagne.
That's an interesting point that you're making right there, because we never did specify who gets to determine what kind of champagne it is, which does open the door
like
for me.
Like I said, if it is proper champagne, it is from Champagne region. That's it.
No, that is not true. If it's labeled champagne, then it's champagne.
Where is Matt Cause? We need Matty Cause. Matty Cause, who does the midday show with my buddy Makowicz on TSN 1050, who actually passed his first rank or first grade, however they do it, sommelier course last year. So he is actually a grade one sommelier. That's who
it is. It is a type of beverage. It is not as if I'm saying you have to. I'm giving her a slab of Kobe beef, but I'm just saying it's Kobe beef because some guy named, you know, Fred Kobe decided to kill a cow in Texas. No, I'm telling you that you can have champagne from wherever. So I think that the door is open for me to give her a box of cold duck from a 7-Eleven store.
You are the cheapest man in the world.
But here's the thing, right? I'm going to share this with you and the listeners, because I know that no one will send it back to her. Because I know that we keep things on the down low here.
Yeah.
There is every chance that I'm just going to buy her a case of Miller High Life, the champagne of beers.
Wow. As they say, or as we say in Canada, Greg, you are so cheap, you would squeeze the beaver on a nickel till she squealed, my friend.
Oh, wouldn't I though? But you know what the thing is, though, dude, is that, like, it's like, I don't consider it to be cheap. I don't consider it to be reneging on a bet. I don't consider it anything but the notion that it's like making a wager with me is like dealing with a genie. You know, I will take things literally. I will do what I can to get out of wagers. I will always pay up in some regard, but you have to make sure that all of your I's are dotted and T's are crossed. Or there's a very good chance that, like in that commercial, if you ask for $1 million, I'm going to give you $1 million deer. Oh my. It's quite possible that it's going to happen.
Just pay up. Just pay up. And don't go for the champagne of beers either.
I'm going to pay up in my own way.
All right. Very good. This will be lovely. So there's another guest that won't come on our podcast. That's fantastic. Good.
Adding
them all up. Adding them all up. So scratch another guest off. All right, who else wants to talk about Detroit then?
We'll find someone, I'm sure.
No shortage of
them. Well, actually, I mean, Ken Holland covers all of Detroit. I don't even know why we have her on. Ken Holland's our Detroit guy, right?
Ken Daniels. We have Kenny on.
Ken Daniels.
Have we had Mickey Redmond on?
No, I don't think we have.
I don't think we've had Mickey. I'd like to have Mickey on. Okay, so you know what? Ansar Khan we can have on. Like, we've got some people.
There are plenty of people that we can have on after I renege on this bet and she doesn't want to talk to us anymore. You're completely
going
to
happen.
The National Hockey League has announced the skills competitions for the skills competition on Saturday at the All-Star Game. The Bridgestone NHL Fastest Skater, because tires. The Honda NHL Breakaway Challenge, because brakes fail. The DraftKings NHL Accuracy Shooting.
Because the kids are good.
That's right. The Gatorade NHL Skills Challenge Relay, because obviously you skated a long time, you need to give you Gatorade.
You don't want to just drink water. You want to hydrate. That's right. That's what you need, Gatorade. Yep.
The Amp Energy Drink NHL Hardest Shot. Now, why couldn't the studio ante up and have American Sniper promote the Hardest Shot competition?
Maybe it should be
Shot Accuracy, too. And, of course, the Discover NHL Shootout. Now, hold on here. I need to scan this real quick here because I'm looking for, what is it, the NHL Skills Challenge Relay. Ah, good. 14 skaters and one goalie. I was really worried we weren't going to have the goalie race. Wait a second. It says goalie goals. It doesn't say goalie race. Oh, man, did they get rid of the goalie skate? That sucks.
That's too bad.
I think they might have. I love that. Remember?
Goalie skate was fun. It should be full contact, though. The guys are padded up enough. Just make it like roller derby with goaltenders. There you go. Why don't you dress up 20 guys? Nah, that's too much. Why don't you dress up 10 guys, five aside, all in goalie gear, roller derby around the rink?
Here's an interesting thing that they're doing. They're incorporating a little bit of the social media into the All-Star Skills Competition.
Use
the NHL
hashtag.
Breakaway. Yeah. Did you see that? The NHL Breakaway Challenge is the coolness. So the team captains from each team are going to have, this is the thing that's the thing where you put on the, it's like prop comedy where Patrick Kane dresses like Superman. Ovechkin wears the goofy glasses. So, captains are going to pick five participants for each team, and then there's one spot that will be guaranteed in the event by fans voting, and the players that the fans will vote for are Johnny Gaudreau of the Calgary Flames, Claude Giroux of the Philadelphia Flyers, and Ryan Johansson of the Columbus Blue Jackets. So one of those guys will be into the game, will be in the event. And what you need to do is hashtag it NHL Breakaway and then the player's last name, which is amazing, because by the time you get through NHL Breakaway Gaudreau, I think that leaves you roughly three characters left.
You know who they should have? We've talked about this before.
Who?
They should bring in like people that are actually expert at trick shots. Like, there's a guy. Do you know who Pavel Barber is? You know this
no,
guy?
I don't.
Have you ever seen him before? Do yourself a favor. Go over to his YouTube channel. Pavel Barber is like the god of hockey trick shots, showing you how to do them, teaching you how to do them. He did the Patrick Kane challenge about a year ago as well, you know, with all the pucks on the ice and you toe drag it all the way through all the pucks. Check out, if you haven't done this, go to do a search on Pavel Barber. I think he's out of Vancouver. Do a search on him and go to his YouTube page. Not just because he featured young T.J. Merrick doing the Michigan goal, on the page, but it's some pretty cool stuff. And like, he shows you how to do all these trick shots. It's pretty sweet. But they should have a guy like him. Have him. Have Rob Heise. Have Robbie Shrimp. Have like all these guys that we've seen before. That, you know, they're not sexy names. They're not Claude Giroux. They're not Johnny Gaudreau. But these guys are kind of good at this kind of stuff. It's kind of what they do. Don't you think?
I would agree. So you mentioned Robbie Shrimp, which means we should probably bring up the question of the day, because I think he's been mentioned a few times. All right. So Merrick, as you know, is the co-host or the host or what? I mean, what the hell are you?
Host of Junior. Host the Junior podcast. Host of the CHL on Sportsnet. I do a lot of Junior stuff.
The podcast is burning up the podcast airwaves with all of its junior hockey talk.
Can I get a quick plug-in? Today,
Jesus,
we're doing
Christ.
Junior, we normally do it on Wednesdays. Today, we're releasing it today. Yesterday, we talked to, ready for it, Don Cherry, about your favorite topic, Greg, the 1953 Memorial Cup with the Barrie Flyers and the St. Boniface Canadiens. Get excited about that. But also, we have Louis DeBrusque, NHL or CHL alumni, and his son, Jake, who plays on Swift Current. He'll probably go in the first round.
Coming
up later on.
Well, in honor of that podcast and in honor of the new Central Scouting Rankings coming out today as well, with Connor McDavid and Jack Eichel atop the rankings, we wanted to ask you, dear listeners, give us your junior hockey player, your favorite junior hockey player, who then went bust in the National Hockey League. Tweet, email puckdaddyblog@yahoo.com, tweet us Jeff Merrick at Wyshynski on Twitters, and then hit us up on the Reddit as well. And do you have somebody in mind, sir, when you put forth this question for the listeners?
Billy Bowler, Windsor Spitfires. This guy lit it up like crazy. I mean, junior hockey is littered with guys that put up boffo points in junior and then never went anywhere, because here's the thing, that when you get on to looking at 18-year-olds, 17, 18-year-olds for the draft, you have to project not what they are now, but you project what they're going to be like at 25. And just because you light up the league right now doesn't mean that it projects – you know, that you're going to be a good hockey player when you're 25 years old, when you actualize as a fully functional NHL player. But Bill Bowler was my guy. Played with the Windsor Spitfires for, I want to say, 4 years. And this guy could take over games, could score at will, never got a sniff in the NHL. Mm. And honestly, if you watch him in junior, you said, this guy's one of the best hockey players I've ever seen. And anyone that's ever played, he played on that Jovanovski Windsor Spitfires team in the early 90s. Anyone that ever watched him play, like, this guy is just one of the best junior hockey players you've ever seen. But size, sorry, folks, it's an issue for a lot of players, and it was for Billy Bowler. But he's my guy, Billy Bowler.
We're going to come back with some more answers to this question, plus talk about Dan Carcillo, plus talk about jersey tossing.
Sure.
But I understand that. Do we have a new intro from Mark Cole?
Yes,
about
we do.
Last week?
Oh, yeah.
So, in honor, whenever we get something that is worthy of doing an intro, we should probably do the intro. And I think Mark hit the nail on the head about last week's technical difficulties.
Yeah.
So, with that, let's start the show proper, shall we?
Hello.
That's about right.
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet. Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
Hello?
Debate hockey, pop culture, and more hockey. Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Enjoy the silence.
Oh, such a nice touch. Okay, here's the thing. When Mark does these intros, and Mark, I know you're listening. Mark, when you do these intros, you email me and Maddie and Greg. I never listen to them because I want to hear them first on the show. Continue to do so. Like, just let me know and let Greg know that. Cause I don't know. Did you listen to it when Mark sent it to you?
Oh, no. I do the same thing. I always want to listen to it fresh.
Yeah. I want to hear it on the show. So
yeah.
Don't be offended, Mark. But I never listen to it before the show actually happens because I want to.
Yeah. But Mark, in fairness, I also never read your emails. So, I mean, there's that too. But I also don't like to listen to the intros before the show as well.
I read Mark's emails and I open his Christmas cards. And thank you, Mark, for sending me a nice one with Pavel and Valerie Bure.
Yeah, I opened up Mark's too, but that weird white powder fell out. Mike Halbeck writes in, Gilbert Brulé. I never fully understood why he didn't pan out.
The Crosby of the West. Oh, it was Brian, for him, it was injuries, honestly. Yep. For Gilbert Brulé. Gilbert Brulé was injuries.
Chris Sayers is Mark Bell turned bruiser to boozer. Oh, God.
Yeah, I felt bad for Mark. Yeah, jeez.
Brian Palmer writes in, Rob Shrimp, man. Rob Shrimp, yeah. Although getting to play hockey for money in Sweden doesn't sound like that much of a bust.
Yep.
Let's see here. Oh, wow. Dave Simon writes in two great Islanders ones, and the second one is one I thought of when we talked about this question.
Dave Chizowski?
Dave Chizowski and Scott Sissons.
Two great ones. Yep.
Yeah, 100%. Sissons is the guy. I remember pulling Sissons' draft rookie card one year.
Was he
top
Nolan
five
draft?
Pick, right?
Yeah, was he Nolan draft that year where everybody got a player, well, except for the Islanders? Was that okay? I'll go back and check that. I think he was Nolan draft.
Lindsay Stefan writes in. Valier Lamy writes in. Patrick Stefan, probably a popular choice, but still hilarious.
Yep. For sure.
Ben Green, Patrick Daze, if only for his subsequent role as Burke's favorite anti-draft argument.
Patrick Daze?
That's what Ben Green said.
I don't know.
There's Patrick a Patrick
Daze? I don't know. I'm Eric Daze. I don't know Patrick Daze.
I put that out there because I hoped you knew who it was. I had no idea what Patrick Daze was.
Let's have a look. Patrick Daze.
Patrick Daze.
Let's see. No.
Brent Morton writes in.
No, there's not on Hockey DB either.
Brent Morton writes in, Kyle Reeves, ask Merrick.
Kyle Reeves?
Okay, I'm supposed to ask you. Are people just testing your junior hockey knowledge? Or are they just trolling you and making up fake names?
Maybe.
I've often wanted to do that with you.
Oh, yeah. I remember this kid. He lit it up big for the Tri-City Americans. That's Stu Barnes on that team? Like, yeah, the 90 goals. Brian Sakic was on the team. That was it. Brian Sakic on that squad. Yep,
Devin McIntyre writes in, growing up in Brandon as a Wheat Kings fan. There's no such thing. I was an enormous Jordan Tutu fan. Never saw a player that could hit and fight quite like him. Was always disappointed that he was largely ineffective as an NHLer. Managed to stay in the lineup for a while in Nashville, but has been, for the most part, a fringe player. Too bad. Was awfully fun to watch.
Tutu was outstanding. He was always one of those guys that I loved. But there were a couple of guys, like... who was it from Brandon? Ray Allison. Ray Allison for the Wheat Kings in like the mid to late 70s had like seasons where he put up like 75 goals every year.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a handful of games for the Flyers in the NHL later on. But he was another one of those guys you looked at and you said, yeah, he's playing with Builder Lego and Brian Propp. And they were the best best line in all of junior hockey. What?
Dial that shit back for a second. What was that first name you said?
Builder Lego.
I thought you said Builder Lego.
Yeah, Builder
Lego.
There's
a dude named Builder Lego.
You don't know Builder Lego? Builder Lego, well, honestly, was as talented as a player like Bobby Smith.
Really?
Builder Lego was amazing. Maybe the best face-off guy I ever saw.
Did he play with Erector Set or perhaps Tinker Toys?
You're a goofball. I loved Billy D. No one snotted out of his nose at the draw better than Builder Lego.
He was the finest,
and man, he scored like 100 goals, almost 100 goals in junior one year with Brandon. That year with Allison and Prop, Brad McCrimmon remember this one game Brad McCrimmon played all 60 minutes of a game. Beast for the Brandon Wheat Kings.
High Deep writes in, Terry Ryan or Jason? Oh, yeah, fill in the last name. Come on, you got it.
Oh, Jason Bonsignor.
Bonsignor,
yeah, sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah, overall.
Mid-90s. Yeah, mid-90s.
It's funny because I watched him play in junior, and if you watch, honestly, and I'm not saying he was close to being this type of player, but when you watch the way he skated and the way he moved, and everyone say this, Wish, he looked like Mario Lemieux. Just, it's uncanny. The way he moved his body and the way he skated and the moves that he made and how controlled and calm he was. Jason Bonsignor looked just like Mario Lemieux. Didn't have the same talent, but junior looked like him. That is a great one, by the way. Jason Bonsignor is a great one. Oh, that's a good one.
Section 328 writes in that, in fact, right, Corbel can call themselves California champagne, but otherwise champagne from the region of France.
Ah, thank you. So, you're on the hook for some expensive sips.
We'll see what happens. We brought up Jordan Tutu, of course, as a pugilistic player, a bit of a pest, and a guy who back in junior had legitimate hockey skill, which obviously brings us to Dan Carcillo. Suspended 6 games for his cross-check that probably broke the arm of Matthew Perreault, though I don't think we know for sure what the injury is. He was suspended for 6 games, 9th suspension in this league. I will say this about Carcillo, and I wrote about him on Puck Daddy today, and I was surprised to look back at the long storied history of suspensions for Carcillo, I am by no means trying to make the case that this man is anything but a thuggy, pesty, miscreant who can't read the rule book.
Yeah.
But honestly, dude, when you have 9 suspensions, and 2 of them are for abuse of officials, and 1 of them is for leaving the bench for a fight, and 2 more are for punching people in the face.
Yeah.
It's only about 4 suspensions that are legit outside his purview or for on-ice incidents. Come on now.
And here's the thing about Carcillo, too. With the death of the heavyweight, you're going to get more guys like this. Like, these guys have always existed, but now that not everyone's carrying a slugger, you want tough, dirty, erratic guys, or at least one of them on your team, to let the other team know that something crazy might just happen here. And whether you like it or not, Dan Carcillo can play in the NHL. He can.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, like, the knee-jerk reaction from the hockey Twitterati when it comes to guys like Carcillo is that he's human garbage and shouldn't be in the league. Throw him out of the league. 9 suspensions. Listen, that applies to some guys. It does. You know, I don't think Pat Coletta is really all that much of a good hockey player. But a guy like Carcillo, if you look back at his history in like the last 3 or 4 years, when incidentally he played for 2 multiple cup champions and the reigning Eastern Conference champions, he's a player that played up in the top 6 in certain situations. He played in the top 6 for the Flyers. Wayne Gretzky thought he was going to be a 30-goal scorer when he was playing for the Coyotes. There's no question this guy's got skill. He's much closer to Steve Downey than he is to some dreg of the league who should be drummed out, you know, because, you know, he's a head case. I mean, that's the bottom line about him.
He just does this every now and then. And for a guy like Dan Carcillo, this is the cost of doing business. Not unlike someone in organized crime who goes to jail for 10 years and writes it off as, well, that's the cost of doing business considering my line of work. It's the cost of doing business when you're a guy like Dan Carcillo.
When I pointed out the teams that employed him over the last few years, I was hit back with a lot of stuff about, well, even really good, smart hockey people make stupid mistakes, but I defy you to explain to me why these are mistakes. Yeah, he didn't work out with the Kings. They decided to start scratching him, and they needed his roster spot, so then they dealt him to the Rangers. And for the Rangers, you know, he was effective for what they asked him to do. He played in the playoffs more than he played in the regular season based on time on ice. Then they moved on, and then he almost gets hooked up with the Penguins, and then he comes back to the Blackhawks, and the Blackhawks bring him back. Why? Well, I don't know. No one really knows, but he's played 31 games. He's been a part of that team, and not a vital part, but a part of that team. I mean, there's some intrinsic value that this guy has that clearly the people who think he's human garbage incarnate don't get. And there's something that a guy like Stan Bowman sees that other people don't get. And maybe you're right. Maybe it is the idea that you need a wild card out there who, you know, every 43 games or so is going to get suspended for something. Maybe you just need that. And maybe it's that element that does bring the Matt Cooks back and the Rafi Torres is back and Pat Coletta back and all these other guys.
Cause,
your theory is a good one, that upon the death of the pugilist, upon the death of the enforcer, what's grown in its place is the injurious wild card.
And that was Steve Yzerman's point coming out of 2005 lockout. That's what Steve Yzerman said. Oh, great, we're going to replace the fourth line goon with the fourth line rat. Are we any better because of it? And listen, it's not as if like these players didn't exist before. Right, like Dennis Polonich was in the league, okay? Like Ken Linsman was in the league. It's not as if all of a sudden, boom, the heavyweights are gone and these guys just magically appear. They've always been there. But now you're going to see more of them. And the one thing from a coach's point of view that I would imagine you'd find attractive about Dan Carcillo is, what can he do? He can distract the other team. If you can get another team so distracted on beating the stuffing out of Dan Carcillo, then what do? Oh, yeah, you tuck the puck ball over the red line. That's what he can do. Get the other team off their game and distract them enough that someone does something dumb taking a run at Dan Carcillo.
And you can see that in the evidence of penalties drawn. I mean, the guy draws a lot of calls, and it's because of that, the way he plays with reckless abandon. And he's a hell of a forechecker. Listen, I hesitate to say I'm a Dan Carcillo fan because I know that will just be played into the Greg was a troglodyte Neanderthal who only likes fighting.
No one is saying this guy is Ryan Smith. He's not. But To your point, though, Greg, there is still a spot for this guy in the NHL. Like him
there is. And he brings something intrinsic and good to the teams that he plays. Look, this guy was a top six player, a top six forward for the Chicago Blackhawks before his injury during his first stint there. Then when he got injured, Brandon Saad took his spot and they never looked back. But when he got injured, he was playing up with Taves and Kane. I mean, it's the bottom line. That's only a few years ago.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I feel this one, and let's talk about the suspension for a second as we wait for Corey. This is one that bugs me, but I know why it had to happen. I know when you're on your ninth suspension, it has to happen. I know when it's a play after the whistle, it has to happen. But that said, it's such suspending to the injury, dude, isn't it?
I know it is, and it's Dan Carcillo, and it's a reputation. He's not exactly the most loved guy in that office. Let's bring Corey Hirsch aboard. He is a former goaltender, a former silver medalist, a former goaltender coach, and now just crushing it on Sportsnet as an analyst. How are you doing today, Corey Hirsch?
I'm doing great. Thanks for that intro.
Don't worry. When I see you next at Sportsnet, I'll hit you up for the $20. Hey, how you liking it so far? By the way, how do you enjoy it?
I am loving it. It's so much fun, and just good people and just having a good time with it. You're actually allowed to have fun, whereas in hockey you have to be so serious and so focused that it's a little bit different to me when someone says, "Hey, go have some fun."
Corey, have you been able to appreciate the jobs that these pricks in the media do now that you are one of them?
Hey, you know what? Players don't realize how hard these guys work. I mean, it's a 24-hour a day job. I mean, it's you're continually looking through notes, getting information, getting your stories ready. It's not go show up, ask a couple questions, and then go home for the day. You know, and I don't think most players and people realize that.
What's been the hardest thing for you? I know a lot of people, when they make the transition from playing or coaching or managing to television or radio, one of the most distracting things is when you're wearing your IFB and your producer or your director are counting you down to break while you're trying to make a point. Has that been the hardest thing for you, or is there something else?
Well, as far as the IFB goes, I have an ex-wife, so I'm used to someone yelling at me in one ear and then listening in the other. So I'm okay with that.
Okay, good.
But no, seriously, the hardest part, I think, has been the hours. Like, there's nights that I didn't realize where the West Coast games are on, and it's 1 o'clock in the morning here, and then you have to go on TV, and you have to have energy, and you have to be lively, and here it is at 1:30 in the morning, and you're dead to the world, and you're trying to get yourself going. And then when you get home, you've just energized yourself with a coffee at 1 in the morning, and then you sit there and you stare at the ceiling for another hour.
Corey, this is why we drink, Corey. That's why. You're supposed to get home and promptly drink a half a bottle of wine and fall asleep on
your
couch.
Need to learn that.
We're going to have to teach you that crap. Hey, we were just talking a second ago about Dan Carcillo. Maybe we'll jump in on the conversation on this one. And, you know, like him or not, here's a guy that can play at the NHL level. And, you know, is someone that, I don't want to say has replaced the tough guy in the NHL, because guys like him have always been around. But, you know, you've been there, in a coaching capacity. You've been there as a player as well. There is plenty of room for a guy like Dan Carcillo. Correct me if I'm wrong. There's room for a guy like Dan Carcillo because he's tough. He's erratic. You don't know what he's going to do from one moment to the next. He can distract another team. And most importantly, he can keep up at the NHL level. Your thoughts on Dan Carcillo?
Well, my thoughts on Dan Carcillo is, yes, he has the skill and the ability, and he can play, and he's a little bit tougher. I'm not sure how tough he would have been 20 years ago. With some of the guys like Tony Twist, I'm not sure he'd be taking liberties on guys of what's going on today. The issue that bothers me, I have a real issue with people that purposely go out to hurt people. And that, to me, is not tough. That's not how the game should be played. I wouldn't want to play against a guy like that. And I'm sure I wouldn't really have respect for a guy on my team like that. When you're talking the Perreault incident, there was no other reason other than to hurt him. There was no reason. It wasn't to intimidate him. It wasn't to do anything. It was to blatantly hurt him. And that's where I have issues with Carcillo. And the nine times going up in front of the committee, I mean, come on. You know, the NHL, this is something that they have to get under control. I mean, you know, it's ridiculous that at nine times he only gets six games after being in front of them again.
So does there need to be a threshold where after a certain amount of suspensions, a player no longer has the opportunity to play in the National Hockey League?
Well, I think it doesn't go, excuse me, in the sense where he doesn't have the opportunity. But, you know, repeat offenders, maybe they double up your suspension. Mm. You know, you got two last time. Well, you're a repeat offender. This is the ninth time. Okay, well, you know, you have a system where you can double up the suspension each time a guy gets suspended. But, you know, there's a lot of other factors involved. There's, you know, the fans and the teams that need players, and there's the PA lobbying for their players. And so I'm not sure that would happen. However, you know, I think that the system could use a little bit of an overhaul in that sense.
Corey, during your playing days, was there a guy like that that maybe you were like so wary of joining your team and saying, I really don't like this dude, and then he turned out to be a really great teammate and an okay person?
Well, that's the other side of it, right? All the tough guys that I played with, they're absolutely the best guys. You would not know. I played with Paul Karuzin Jr., nicest man alive. I played with Troy Crowder, you know, just good guys, and they know their job and they know their role. But intentionally going out to hurt somebody, most of them were honest players. You know, they would drop the gloves, you would fight, and that was it. But intentionally going out to hurt somebody or try and, you know, break an ankle or an arm, those guys just didn't believe in that back in that. They believed that you dropped your gloves and you fought somebody. And that's how you took care of business. That's just kind of the way it was. I think that code has kind of been a little bit, the line has been a little bit shaded now with, you know, the tough guys not being in the games anymore. But I know Winnipeg has Peluso, and the next time they play Chicago, I'm sure he'll be looking for him.
100%. What was Matt Cook like in Vancouver with you guys? Because he was young
when he
joined
you guys.
Cook.
I had him over for Christmas, actually, the one year. You know, just he was a good young player at the time. A little feisty, but nothing to the point of where he was now. And I think the way I view him is, and I like him as a guy, I still talk to him. I don't like some of the things he's done. But I think that he's realized that. I think that he took, he looked at it and he took responsibility for it after in Pittsburgh, all those things that happened. And I think that he actually felt some remorse over it. I'm not sure with Carcillo saying it's a hockey play, that he had any remorse at all over that. And that's where I have an issue as well, is, you know, there's people that are remorseful. They try not to do it again and they can change their game. Carcillo has no remorse over any of that stuff. And if he's coming up to the board for me and shows no remorse, I mean, I'm throwing the book at him.
Yeah, I especially loved back. I was looking through his suspension history, and I remembered he got suspended for an incident off the faceoff against Max Talbot in that crazy ass Flyers versus Penguins series a few years back.
I remember that.
Anyway, and NHL suspended him for a butt end to Talbot's face, and Carcillo's response was, "Well, you know, I think they're wrong. I mean, it wasn't a butt end. It was simply just a sucker punch
really?
Off the faceoff."
Yeah, like, really? You know, I mean, maybe he's been taught to just, you know, deny everything. I don't know, but, you know, as Pat Quinn would say, and he'd say the jukebox don't lie, and that means, you know, the video shows everything. So it's pretty tough to get away with anything in the NHL nowadays.
Hey, Corey. Go ahead, sir.
I was going to say, Corey, goaltenders. I know recently you've been all about Ryan Miller, but outside of the goalie in Vancouver, who does it for you right now in the NHL?
Well, Pekka Rinne. We're going to see right now how valuable he is to the Nashville Predators. Carter Hutton went in there in Detroit, made one save on four shots. So, you know, I think over the next little while, as long as he's out, and I'm interested to see how long he's out because it's a sprained knee, but I don't know to what degree. Brian Elliott was out for 6 weeks with a sprained knee. So depending on the degree, we'll see after the All-Star break where he's at. But he is extremely valuable to that team. And I think last year, what happens when you get out with an injury as a player, especially the long-term one that he had to look at his career being over last year. At one point, he didn't think he was ever going to play again. So to come in this year and have a renewed sense of value for his career really, I think, has boosted his game. And you're just happy to be playing. You just enjoy the game so much more when you look at that. And it's almost taken away from you. So I think that's why he's having such a good year. He's just enjoying playing, and his numbers are phenomenal.
They are indeed. I wanted to, spinning off Merrick's Rene question, I had a question for you. How do goalies view the Hart Trophy? Like, do you guys sit back and say, this is horseshit, we should win this every year? Or is it a situation where you're like, goalies shouldn't win the Hart and that the Vezina is basically your Hart?
I think goalies should be able to win the Hart. If you're the reason that your team is in the position they're in, isn't that what the Hart Trophy is for? The most valuable player to his team. So,
then they should win it every year, Corey. Then a goalie should win it every year. Then they should win it every year.
If you didn't have one in the net, right? I mean, it'd be 30-0 because that's what the shots would be. So, you'd have to have a goalie. There's players that mean more to their team, I think, than the goalies do. You could argue that Crosby and Malkin are more valuable to their team than Fleury, even though, you know, without Fleury, there's not much you can do. But I do think Pekka-Rinne should be up for the Hart Trophy this year, depending on how things finish. But mid-season reports, who's more valuable to his team than that guy? And like I said, we're going to see this over the next few weeks of his injury, how valuable he is to the Nashville Predators.
You know, something that I've always wondered about, and curious, maybe you're biased because your goaltender's won this, but I've always felt that for the Jennings Trophy, the goaltending coach should at least be named as
acknowledged.
Well. Don't have to actually, right? Like I look at what happened with you in Toronto. You got punted from Toronto, all of a sudden you show up in St. Louis, and all of a sudden Corey Hurst's goaltenders are winning the Jennings Trophy. I just thought that your name and all goaltending coaches' names should have gotten some acknowledgement when those goaltenders go up to pick up the Jennings. What do you think?
If I was there, I'd hug you right now. You know what? you know what? It'd be nice to get acknowledgement. One of the things about being a goalie coach, and I will say this right now, is that goalie coaches, we're kind of like the nerd in the classroom. Like, we just don't get the respect that a lot of the other coaches do. And I think that's mainly because a lot of the other coaches don't understand goaltending, so they just kind of push it off to you and they leave it to you. But they also, in a sense, treat you like you don't know what the game is all about. You just know what goaltending is. And from the time I was a kid, I was just told, just get in the net and stop the puck. And that was really the attitude until now that we have goalie coaches. So I think there's that stigma that goalie coaches are trying to overcome. If you look at what Roley Melanson's done with all of his goalies, Halak, Price, now Ryan Miller, this he needs to be acknowledged and respected.
I remember talking to Ian Clark, okay, who handles the affairs for the Blue Jackets, and this was when Bobrovsky was having the Boffo season, and I said, what's the one thing that's most impressive about Sergei Bobrovsky? And he said, outside of, how he comports himself in the net, technically, the one main thing about Sergei Bobrovsky is he really listens. I remember saying to myself, Corey, did Ian just shoot himself a compliment? Like, did he just compliment himself here? Like, when a goalie coach says his goalie's doing well and he really listens, you're patting yourself on the back, right?
I know Ian Clark, and that might have been a self-promotion, but he's done a good job with Bobrovsky. I mean, we can't deny he's done a great job.
100%. I've never heard a goalie coach say when a goalie's struggling that this guy really listens. It's only when he's doing well.
I'm going to stay away from that one because I'll tell you what, when you want to take the credit for when a goalie's playing well, you better damn well be ready to take the credit for the blame for when he's not playing well too. So it goes both ways.
Indeed it does. Hey, last one for me. I wanted to get your take on I think one of the best stories of the season so far, which is the New York Islanders, and specifically about Yaroslav Halak. I know a lot of us thought that Halak wouldn't be able to shoulder the load as a starter for this team, but he's done so, and he's done so quite well. What's your take on Halak this season?
Well, here's the thing with Halak. I had him in St. Louis, and it took us 4 years to get him to the point where he was working hard in practice. He was showing up and performing every day. He had a lot of inconsistencies when he came to us, which was one of the reasons we went on and got Brian Elliott. So Brian is a very hard worker, and he pushes and he pushes. And I'm not sure Yaro was very good in that situation with having somebody push him. Some guys are, some guys aren't. So Brian was a guy that was kept continually pushing and pushing for the number one job. So it was a tough situation for Yaro at times, as he would get frustrated if he wasn't getting all the playoff time. But with the way Brian was playing, we could not play Brian. I mean, his goals against average in the last 4 years, I think, is the best in the NHL. So now he's in a situation on the island where he has nobody pushing him. He really doesn't have a lot of pressure They've got really nothing to lose there. There's nowhere to go but up. And it's a good situation for him, and I'm happy for him. He's found a home that, you know, seems to work for him. And I think, if anything, that came out of St. Louis is that we really instilled a work ethic in him. The situation at the end of the year was is that we just felt that we needed to upgrade to try to take a run at the Cup. And sometimes you take risks, but that was just what we did. And I think with Yarrow, it wasn't the fact that, you know, his play or anything. He's a good guy. We just felt that we needed to upgrade his goaltending. But it's good to see Yarrow find a home in the island. And it seems to be like they're treating him the way he needs to be treated.
Hey, yeah. Last one here, Corey. And listen, thanks for your time. We've got to get you back on sooner than later. I can already tell people are going to love hearing what you have to say. curious about you growing up in Medicine Hat as a goaltender. I'm going to totally throw a dart here. Growing up, were you a fan of either Pete Peters or Kelly Rudy?
Oh, my God. A fan. Kelly Rudy was my first goalie coach when I went to hockey.
Oh, no way.
He was there. Yeah.
Really?
I love Kelly Rudy. He was my idol. Like, I went and I'm going to tell a story about Kelly Rudy. I was 12 years old. They came into Calgary, and I was living in Calgary at the time. And my dad, out of the blue, called up the hotel in Calgary where the Islanders were staying. Kelly answered, invited him, my dad, to bring me down for lunch. We had lunch. We talked. You know, just a completely classy thing. Huh. That who would do that for a kid? You know, who would do that today for a kid? I mean, I'm sure guys, some guys would. But just what a great – he's just. But that's the type of person he is. He's just one of the best people in the game. I'm so glad that he's still in the game. I talk to him from time to time when I see him. But, yeah, I mean, still to this day, I mean, the man is probably, you know, my idol of everything.
Well, there you go. That's awesome. Settles it. Hey, that's a great story. Listen, Corey, thanks so much for stopping by. I look forward to seeing you around the shop, and take care. We'll catch up soon.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, guys.
Our pleasure. Corey Hirsch from Sportsnet. Hey, what did I tell you, Wish?
Hey, you know, that's interesting. Yeah, he was great. Interesting uh-huh. about the backup goalies thing, because, you know, one of my favorite players insofar as his existence in hockey over the last maybe 10 years was Antero Ninamäki. Like, Ninamäki was never good enough to be the guy, but he was always the guy that you bought in to push your starter, right? And he did a hell of a job, and he was always the dude that would take over the starter's job for like 2 weeks, right? Like he would play lights out, and he would take over the starter's job, and then everybody would be like, oh my God, what's happening? Ninamäki's gonna, and then he would never keep the job. He was never good enough to keep the job, but he was always the guy that teams would bring in to push the starter. And I always thought how it's interesting, like Corey said, some guys need that, and some guys don't need anyone looking over their shoulder.
Patrick Waugh. excuse me. No, sorry. Stuck in my throat there. Well, didn't Ninamäki have that great American Hockey League run with John Stevens and the Philadelphia Phantoms when they won the Calder that year on that stack team beating John Anderson?
I'm not saying he's a bad goalie. I'm just saying he never had the stuff to be a starter.
That's true. That's one of the hardest things to be in the NHL is a really good – Bunny Larocque was probably the best. Johan Hedberg would be up there as well. Corey Schwab
Hedberg's would be up there. Yeah, Hedberg's a great one.
Because let's not forget, too, like you're not just the guy that sits there with the baseball hat and collects the paychecks. Like you're the guy as the backup goalie who's expected to stay after practice for the guys with the buckets of pucks and stay there until the guys shoot the final puck. And then you sit there. You don't play for long stretches. You might have to come in the first and play a lot of essentially middle relief just to get through a game. You may get the odd start because your starters, you know, needs to rest. And it's hard to get up and win those games. Well, Bunny Larocque was the best at it. But it is such – that's a great point, Wish. That is such a rare skill in the NHL.
It's interesting. It's just really interesting to think about Halak because, like, all of the empirical evidence was that Halak needed to be in competition with Price.
Carey Price,
and they need to be in competition with Elliott. And then he goes to Long Island, and everybody's like, well, what's going to happen? He's never been a starter before. He's never started more than, like, you know, 40-some-odd games in a season or whatever. and he's an all-star. You know, it's like you never know what's going to happen when you take away the element of competition from some of these guys and say, here's your crease.
Sometimes
they flop, and sometimes they do what Halak did this year.
You know, a quick little point. I joked about Patrick Waugh. The reason that Patrick Waugh is so bizarre to me, and he never liked to be pushed by a backup goaltender, to the point where he told Team Canada that he would not go and play in Nagano in 98 unless he was guaranteed all the games. Guy did not want a backup goaltender. Yet, he is one of the fiercest competitors the game has ever seen. He just didn't want internal competition. He was fine with competing against another team, but someone competing for that position, he wanted no interest in it. And, you can't deny it because it worked for him.
Which is really weird because he's never been a creature of bruised ego. So anyways, in the remaining time we have left in the show, we mentioned we would probably talk about it, so we might as well. Jersey tossing once again at the ACC, this time resulting in a couple of arrests. Now, the interesting wrinkle here is I guess there was a jersey thrown during play at one point.
Yes, there was.
And that's not cool. I went back and looked at what we wrote about Wafflegate when it happened, when that whole weird thing was happening. And again, if you throw something during play, you shouldn't do that. That's not a cool thing to do. Should it result in there be criminal charges pressed against you? I don't know.
What if a player steps on it? Like, what if you throw it as someone's on a 3-on-2 and he steps on it and blows out his groin?
And in ifs and buts were candy and nuts.
We'd all have a Merry
all
Christmas.
The cavities. Listen, the point is this, though, last night. It's not about, for me, the things being thrown during the course of play. It's more about the idea that a jersey toss should result in any sort of criminal action. Because at the end of the day, what are we talking about here? We're talking about something done in protest. If a fan had thrown a beer on the ice at any point in the game, they're not coming after him. They're going after these guys and making it public because they want everyone to stop protesting the terrible mismanagement of this franchise for decades. They're embarrassed by it.
First of all, to your beer point, you don't see people throwing beers on the ice because jerseys cost less than the Canada Center, so no one's going to throw a freaking beer on the ice. I just think I'm cool with throwing a jersey on the ice as long as it's during a stoppage. I can understand the sensitivity about it becoming too much of a thing. Like, honestly, you don't want the Maple Leafs jersey teddy bear toss, essentially, at every break. Like, that's the one thing you got to really worry about here is people just – because first it's a waffle and it's a jersey. What's next? Right? And I understand – the philosophical disconnect if you want to challenge it legally because fans are encouraged to throw hats on the ice when a player scores 3 goals. So it's not as if it's a foreign concept in hockey. I just don't like it when the play is on. That's all. But I just wish people would – okay, so we've been through the jersey toss thing. We get it. I just wish there was another way to demonstrate disgust or to demonstrate – to have a sort of active rebellion that didn't involve throwing a jersey on the ice. Because you know what? That's kind of become too simple. Like, think like Winnipeg Jets fans. Be creative about it. I don't know what that thing is. Honestly, I don't. I don't know what it is. But there has to be something more creative you can do to protest at how your team is performing.
I think it's pretty creative. I have no problem with it. I think it's the most emphatic thing you can do besides not showing up for the game. But obviously, we know in Toronto they're all going to show up for the game. My thing about this is that it continues to be one of the most dysfunctional and bizarre relationships I've ever seen between a team and their fans. You know, it's the jersey tossing, it's the booing, it's management threatening arrest and then arresting fans. It's the it's the stick raise thing. Leafs players, and God bless them, because they have every right to snap back at the paying customers who have, you know, it's not as if one has to stay silent and the other one gets to boo and jeer and throw shit. But have you ever seen any players in the NHL, when asked about the behavior of fans, just abjectly just snark on them and just be like, F those guys? I mean, it's such a weird relationship. And it's weird because at no point are the Leafs management or the Leafs players ever worried about there being a single empty seat in that building, even if the fans boo and jeer and throw shit on the ice.
That's what happens when you're... You know, when you really don't mind your P's and Q's about your leadership group. Like, could you ever see Matt Sundin? Could you ever see a Matt Sundin team going through this or doing things this Maple Leaf squad has done if Matt Sundin were there? Not a chance. Like, at the end of it, doesn't your leadership group, or at least your captain, have to have his thumb on the pulse of the city and the fans. Sundin was brilliant at it. Cliff Fletcher was probably the best general manager at it. Like, he played the city, you know, like a violin. It was beautiful the way he understood it, and he understood the nuance of the city. But when you have things like players refusing to do the stick salute, or just, to your point, snarking on fans or throwing their hands up and saying, I don't know what the hell is wrong. Like, it just doesn't happen with teams that have players like the Maple Leafs' previous captain on it. It doesn't. And that comes down to, I think, players are miscast in Toronto. And you have all of life is managing. Greg, can I give you a little life lesson? All of life is managing expectations. And if you have an expectation that Dion Phaneuf is going to be a number one defenseman and a captain in the purest sense, you're going to be disappointed. If you have the misconception that Phil Kessel is going to be someone you can build your team around or have that expectation, you're going to be horribly disappointed because you have roles that are being filled by people that shouldn't be in those roles.
Mm. I wish we had a chance to have Dave Bedini on to talk about his comment earlier today about how seeing a sweater on the ice reminds me of seeing a dead soldier, a sick imagery and ugly gesture. What is Dave even talking about?
I played hockey with Dave on Saturday. Jeez, that's a tough one.
Can you ask?
I'll ask Dave. I don't know. I played with him on Saturday. I'll ask him the next time. Did he say he write that?
He did.
He was hacked. Wow. He was hacked. He was hacked. Dave was hacked.
Oh, man. All right, everybody. Well, that's the show for today. We have to finish a little bit early today. Yeah. But we'll be back tomorrow for more fun and merriment. And then after that, I don't know, because Wednesday I'm around, Thursday, Friday, I'm in Columbus.
I'm going to be on the telephone tomorrow for the program. However much you want me, I'll be on my way to St. Catharines for the Top Prospects game.
Okay.
That's where I'm going to be for the next couple of days.
All right, so we'll figure out some stuff, and I know that me and the boys will probably do a podcast from Columbus either Thursday or Friday, because me and Leahy and Cooper and Nickel will be there, so we'll do a little Yahoo-centric MVSW.
Ooh, fun.
But anyway, I just wanted to let you know that before you started with your effing. Mm-hmm. Why did you step out on me, Greg?
It's fine. If you just want to embarrass me publicly like that, that's fine. That's cool. That's what you want.
Oh, I know. Oh, it's quite embarrassing. I wish I could be more blatant about it like you do. Please listen to Jeff's Junior podcast where he has Don Cherry on.
And then
please come back and listen to this little piece of nothing that's been around for 3 years where we talk to a fourth liner on the Guelph Storm. Don Cherry, ladies and gentlemen, on Merrick's other podcast.
Yeah, me and Sam Cosentino are going to lead on a couple more interviews here, including Dan Marr, head of NHL Central Scouting. We'll talk to him in a couple of moments. That'll all be available on iTunes a little bit later on tonight.
Tune in to the Junior podcast tomorrow where their guests Barack
today.
Obama and the Pope. And then tune into MBSW. We'll all be interested in interviewing a homeless man muttering outside the Hockey Hall of Fame.
He's got some issues in the builders category. Thinks Eagles should be back in there.
So what do you think? You think the Sedin should be on the same plaque?
I just asked for some change, mister.
So that's coming up later on this week on Merrick vs. Wyshynski. Stay tuned.
We'll see you tomorrow. Bye.